like to just chat about the topic again. Give up your referee whistle. Preventing and solving sibling and peer conflicts. Now, I don't know about you, but having had two children go through my hands, and as an educator myself of 30 years of being in the classroom, I certainly have had my fair share of having to deal with children and having to prevent some or other conflict that's on the way. Right, there we've got our first slide. And basically, we're going to be looking at this red box section in terms of our strategy and our plan and how we're going to work with the child. Just to give you a brief overview, we'll start at the bottom of the house, the foundation of the house. And the foundation section, we look at goal setting and we look at our parenting styles. We then look at the universal blueprint, which is this whole page over here. And two of the goals that we'd like to establish with our children is, or parenting, is self-esteem, cooperation, and independence. But the next thing we need to look at is to find out whose problem are we going to be dealing with. And it's a nice topic of conflicts that children have with their peers or their siblings is a child problem. And so we're going to look at problem solving this tool set, and we're going to look at how do we listen to our children and how do we guide them in helping them with this problem. The rest of the strategy and the plan is basically if the child is involved in misbehavior or not, as we can see here in the attic, whether it was on the unintentional or on purpose. And if it is on purpose, we're then going to have a look at how we're going to discipline him. So that is all that is available. Should you want to know more, please do not hesitate to contact me. At the end, you will get my contact details. So the first thing in terms of siblings and peers, we've got to ask ourselves a question. This problem is and belongs to the child. They have a problem with somebody else. They have a problem with their emotions. So these are two areas which a child needs to learn to deal with, needs to learn how to solve these kind of issues that appear in their life. And so what we try to do is we try to keep the ball in their court. Now, you could just for a moment just imagine holding a spiky ball of some sort. Very often, we equate this to being a situation of where we will be able to make sure that the child keeps the ball in their hand, the ball representing their problem. The moment I go and grab that ball out of the child's hand and say, hey, this looks familiar. I had a ball like this once upon a time. I know exactly how to deal with this. I know what to do with this ball. And very often it is like that when a child has a problem. They come running, they share it with us, and sometimes we want to solve that problem for them because we recognize the situation that they find themselves in. The problem is that it doesn't help the child in developing independence. One of those goals we looked at earlier on in that drawing of the house. They don't get to solve problems. They don't learn conflict management styles because somebody else is busy dealing with those problems. Their self-esteem, one of the other long-term goals we want, is also not very encouraged to grow much because we are doing all the problem solving. We are helping them and handling the situation. So they feel like they're a bit of a dumb person, not able to solve problems, and I need outside help the whole time, and so my self-esteem can take a knock. The other thing is independence. They keep on running to somebody else, and they don't learn to be assertive. They don't learn to stand on their own two feet. So this is something that we want to do when dealing with this topic. So the first thing we need to do after keeping the ball in this child's court is we need to listen to the child. They have a problem, they have an issue, they have a conflict that needs to be resolved. Now, from an adult perspective, sometimes we can just shake our heads and say, oh my goodness sake, it is such a small little problem. What are you going on about? However, children will come to us with small little issues for us. But for them, it is a big thing. It's the only thing they see in their lives. And they want to know, can I trust you? Are you caring enough? And the first thing we as the listener can do is to acknowledge their feelings. I see you are angry. I see you frustrated. I see you are not enjoying this conflict that you're having with your brother, your sister, or your friend. When we acknowledge that feeling, when we listen to them and their side and get their feelings and their perspective of what's happening, they will tend to be ready to move on to solving that problem. But if we don't listen, they are not going to, they don't feel that their feelings are acknowledged, they're not going to trust us more, even maybe in the future. You know the good old saying, I don't care how much you know until I know how much you care. And so this acknowledging of feelings is an enormous way of showing unconditional love, of showing that we care. We might not understand their feelings. We might not agree personally with the feelings. But we have to realize that feelings are not right or wrong. They have those feelings. And so when we acknowledge those feelings, they feel trusted, they feel accepted, they feel loved, and they will then want to move on with whatever happens from there. The next thing we want to do is we want to clarify the facts. We want to chat, we want to ask them helpful questions. We want to get them to understand their situation. And then, does this person want a solution? And if they want a solution, we will then help them problem solve. If they're just venting and just chatting, then that's fine. Now you get certain people that just want to vent. They just want somebody to have an ear to listen to, and they want to chat. That is not a problem. Allow them the space and the time to do that. Others are conquerors, and so they might not want a solution. They'll want to go off and solve it themselves. Allow them the opportunity to solve it. Because when they solve problems themselves, they are developing. They are developing their problem-solving techniques. They are developing their conflict resolution styles. They are developing as a person. You're able to be independent and to stand on their own two feet in order to move forward. So we need to be very careful when we chat. Because very often, if we do not give the child the space, we can put certain roadblocks into our communication with the child. So they come along, they have an issue, they have a problem, they start to chat with us, and then we are impatient. Doesn't that happen so often? We just want to get on and solve the problem now and move on with our lives. But we need to remember our long-term goals, and our long-term goals of creating a child who is got good self-esteem, creating a child who is independent. We need to invest in the time up front. If we're impatient, we're going to have a problem. And I actually think we would, at the end of the day, spend as much time, if not more time, had we exercised a bit of patience. Where does patience come from? I actually believe patience comes from an understanding, comes from a knowledge of. And so, Jennifer, well done for being on this little chat here, because you are going to be learning a tip of two. And I have no doubt, as a result of that, it will help with any impatience should you be suffering from one of those. The other thing we often do is we impose our will, we try to give solutions, we deny the child's feelings, it's not that bad, we minimize it, we begin to preach to them, and these things just close up. We try to fix it up quickly. We then start asking all the questions, and what's happening, why did this happen, and whatever. And the moment we go into journalistic questioning, the child's just going to close up. Be careful of labeling and name calling. And then also the when we stories. You know, when I was a child, you know, or start lecturing them. These things just close the communication. And if they don't cut you short in this specific conversation, they will move off from this and remember what they felt like now. And if another situation arises, you would most probably be the last to hear about it, because they fear any one of these roadblocks to communication taking place. So when we focus on the feeling up front, We need to try to identify the fear. And this can be a challenge, especially if a child is young. They don't have the vocab in terms of understanding it. So they might use one word to describe everything. I'm angry. I'm cross. But frustrated is another word. Other words that they need to try to learn need to be put into their vocabulary, and we need to help them with this vocabulary. And once they'll be able to identify and express what they're feeling, we will have a better understanding. And so it's important that we need to summarize what the child is saying in our own words of what they are thinking or what they mean. Because very often in their frustrated anger environment, they might not be able to grasp and grab hold of the correct word or even have the vocab available, the vocabulary available to be able to identify and express their own feelings. You just have to think of a little baby and how that baby starts to cry because they don't know how to say, I'm hungry. I don't know how to say how my bottom or my nappy is wet. So let's focus on the feelings. If anything, of anything around this little chat and this webinar today that I could ask you to stop, think, and plan when dealing with your next child's issues or problems that they have, this would be the key. I would go as far as to say that focus on feelings would be the cornerstone of helping the child to move forward. You really, really want to get through to them, I care, I love you, and I wanting the best. The next thing we want to do is we want to ask some helpful questions. Now these questions, as we said earlier on, one of the roadblocks is journalistic questionings. We need to ask questions that are open-ended. And we need to try and avoid a situation where we have a yes and a no answer. So we need to help them and guide them through their logic to consider important points or ideas. Now, with a younger child, their exposure and their experience is not as big as ours is or as much experience as we have. And this is where we've got to be very careful. Because we can turn around and we could say, hold on, I know, I've experienced this, I have a solution. And the moment we go there, we start to take over. The moment we go there, it's like reaching out and taking that ball out of the child's hand. It's taking that problem out of their control, and we then take over and tell them how we are going to solve the situation and the problem. So we need to be careful about that. If you both understand the problem but need a solution or and a plan to be able to move on, then once we understand it, we will then be able to work out a solution. Without understanding the problem, we can get ourselves into a major problem, which I will share with you a little bit later on. Right, then when we get into the examining the possible solutions, we now need to brainstorm. Now the interesting fact very often, which happens, and I don't know about you, but for myself, is that somebody will give an idea and I immediately, because I'm a conqueror by nature when it comes to problem solving, I will turn around and I'll say, yeah, I've got the answer, I've got the solution. Or, no, that won't work. You know, I've been there, I've done that, got the t-shirt, and the t-shirt didn't fit so well. So, but we need to first do the brainstorm. And it's important that you just chat to the child and say, listen, we're going to try and solve this problem that you have, this conflict that you're having with your peer or with your siblings. And any idea comes in, and write it down. Make a list together. Then we start talking about evaluating each idea. What would happen if you did this? Now, just in saying that sentence, I want to draw your attention to one word in that sentence. And that is the word you. Whenever we deal with a child who has a problem and we want them to grow as a result, we use you messages. How do you think this can be solved? What are some of the solutions that are going through your mind? Do you think you would be able to do this and solve it by yourself? Or would you like me to come alongside you and give you some guidance. The moment I pick up in my language that I'm using an I message, I know how to solve this problem. I know what you should do. And you two better just stop behaving like that and go to your room and I will make sure. And when the moment we come with the I, then we have taken the problem over and we're denying our children the opportunity and the right to be able to grow. And then we also take the problem away. So we need to keep the ball in their court. Right. So the next thing we need to do is then decide on a solution or plan. Now, this is critical. Who is going to make the decision on what will be done and how the solution or plan will be meted out? The child makes the decision. You see, we've gone and we've made the list. We've evaluated them. We might even gone and ranked each and every item on that list. And the child chooses number 3 on our list. Number 1, the child is, nah, I don't want to do that. I want to do this. We then allow the child to make that decision and then to commit to that solution for a trial period. Now, it depends on the circumstance and the situation as to how long that trial period would be. But in most cases, that trial period could be a day or 3. Try to keep it as short as possible and agree to meet again if the plan doesn't work. Simply ask, how's it going? Is it working out? Show some interest, show some love. Be involved in terms of your caring. However, do it in such a way that you are not checking up on them, but wait for them to be able to turn around and say, yes, it's working, or no, actually, that didn't work so nicely. And then you can go back and say, okay, would you want to have a look at some of those other ideas that we looked at? And then which one now looks the most attractive to you? So that is a very, very good way of handling some situations. Okay, so what are the 3 best tools for preventing sibling rivalry? Now, very often, as parents, we react. We just wait for something to happen, and then we go on to the problem solving, and we react very often the way my mom and dad reacted, or maybe even the opposite to the way mom and dad reacted, because there's no ways I'm going to do the same. So we need to do some planning. Stop, think ahead, and what are the kinds of things and where would sibling rivalry take place? Well, right in the very beginning of a child's life is when a new child joins the family. And here it's very important that we try to get the older child to be involved as much as possible. And we had a lovely situation, strangely enough, right today at our school assembly. And one of the little girls was brought forward and said, she's going to now be the big sister of a baby brother that was born yesterday, and she's going to be a wonderful sister and all that. And that is the kind of things we are talking about. We try to get the people, when they come to visit and to see the new baby, we try to say to the older child, why don't you take Mr. and Mrs. Smith to go and have a look at your baby brother? And we place that person in a position where they feel important, where they don't feel after 3 or 4 years of being the main attraction that now all of a sudden it's not there. Because that jealousy of not being the main attraction certainly can instigate and start a hate-love relationship between the two children. So get the new child involved ASAP. Right, the next thing that very often we do is we get involved with comparisons. Now, just think of the following scenario. You have 2 children, one is 9 years old, the other one is 14 years old, and you walk past both their rooms and you see, hold on, this room is in a mess. They need to go and do a little bit of a cleanup. So you say, listen, my sweethearts, off you go, please go and tidy up your rooms. They need a little bit of attention. I'll be along in 30 minutes to see how you progress. 30 minutes goes by, you pop in by the 9-year-old and you say, Wow, that is awesome. Everything's in place. Everything is nice and neat. Then maybe with a little bit of humor and a chuckle, you can say, is there anything under the bed? And go and have a look underneath the bed, and hopefully you find nothing. And then you say, wow, that is beautiful. You've packed everything away so nicely, and as you've been trained to do, well done. You can be very proud of yourself. And then you walk out of the 9-year-olds and you go into the 14-year-old and you've hardly taken half a step into the room and you say, oh my soul, what the heck have you been up to for the last half an hour? This is certainly not what I expected. Now come here, I want to show you your younger sibling's room. Just come and look at it. Look at the 9-year-old. Look what a 9-year-old can do. Look how beautiful and clean, how everything is packed away and in its right place. And look at George, you're 14 years old. I would have expected so much better from you. Now, you're not coming out of this room until this room is sorted. And you turn around and you walk off. You're at the other end of the house, and your two children move out of their rooms, and they meet each other in the passage. Can you imagine what's going to happen? Oh, hello, little brother. So nice to see you. I love you. Give me a huggle-buggle. Certainly not that. Certainly not. What you will have and what you will find there is glaring daggers and the older one ready to say, oh, you're such a goody two-shoes or some other name-calling situation that will take place. And who started that rivalry? Who started it? We did as the adult by going in and making the comparisons. So the golden rule, as you can read there, is anything you want to say to one child, say it without reference to the other child or another child. I find something special about that child and I can make a compliment or a comment around a good quality of their child without any referencing to another. Children are different. I have seen that over and over and over again in my 30 years of education. I will teach the elder sibling, 2 or 3 years later, the younger sibling will come fast. Exactly the same family conditions, the same family environment, the same family, and they are like chalk and cheese. You cannot even believe sometimes that they come out of the same household in terms of their academic ability, their sporting abilities and achievements, their manners. It's just the variety is just vast and very memorable. So let's look at that one, number two, very carefully and avoid where we are comparing. Then the other one is we need to be very careful here about being trapped by the children who will turn out, that's not fair, I also want the same. Yeah. For example, my two children, when they finished school, they had their, and we call it here in South Africa, a matric dance. You would in America call it your, what's it, a dance of some sort, where they would then be leaving school. And my daughter was the eldest one. Now, it cost a fair amount of money. I'm not too sure. I'm going to guess with the conversion rate of around $400 for her to have everything that she needed for her matric dance or for her end of school dance. 2 years later, when my son came along, he only needed about $150 for him to be able to get what he needed to be able to attend the dance. Now, a trap would be to say, hey, that's not fair. You spent 4,000 rand, South African rands, on the daughter. You only spend 1,500 rand on me, the son. I want the other 2,500 rand. And if we don't get that, then you don't love me. You love the other one. And so we need to be careful because the answer is simply, my son, did you have everything you needed for your matric dance? Yes, I did. Daughter, did you have everything you needed for your matric dance? Yes, I did. Therefore, You are individuals, you are different. You're different genders, you have different needs, and thereby there are different expenses attached to. So avoid trying to always be fair, because life is not fair. That is for sure. One person is born on the east side of the railway line, and the other person is born on the west side of the railway line. And we see cities, villages are separated by economic, social situations, and that can be unfair. And life isn't fair. But we need to learn and teach children to be content with that which they have. Because happiness is not all about what we have. Happiness is a condition of our heart. Happiness is a condition of how we perceive our lives and our relationships with people. And that is basically what we need to watch out for. So watch for those three, and hopefully you will be able to go forward. So there we are. I love you both the same. Would be one way, instead of saying, who do you love more? Then we're trying to be pulled into a trap. Instead of buying equal gifts, I've shared that now in terms of the two children going to the dance. And then this last one, instead of spending equal time, give according to the needs. And when you do, make it quality. I know of a situation where the young boy of the family would come home and say to the father, "Dad, Dad, come and play with me, ball outside." And Dad would give him a little smile and say, "Son, the first 15 minutes belongs to the wife. Mom and I are going to have a cup of tea and a chat and find out about our day. After 15 minutes, we'll come and play with you with pleasure." And from what I understand, this grew into a habit. And every day, the son would come in and says, "Dad, come and play. Okay, in 15 minutes, Dad, will you come and play?" And so the dad would then give his time with the wife, have a hello, have a cup of tea, connect with his spouse, and then go off and spend time with his son. The daughter was a bit of a quieter person, and able to entertain herself more, and was artistic, loved reading, and so spent large amounts of me time, I suppose one could call it, just looking after and entertaining herself. And the father came and told me that years later, when the daughter was a teenager, she came to the father one day and said, "Why do you love my brother more than me?" And the father said, he was absolutely gobsmacked. He said, "What do you mean? I have never denied spending time with you. Whenever you have asked, I've always made sure that I could have spent time. How could you say that?" And she turned to him and she said to him, "But why do I even have to ask? Why don't you just spend time with me?" And to the father's credit, he took stock and he said, "I will make time for you. I'll tell you what." And they made a date, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks later in a weekend, and they took the whole Saturday. And they went off into the mountains and they did some zip lining and a little hike, and they went out for a meal, and they had a good chat, good quality time, focused attention, and all of that. And that filled up her love tank. So the son got a lot of little bits of time. She got focused attention, which filled up her love tank. And so although they were not equal in time, they definitely both were shown that they were loved unconditionally. All right, 3 steps to resolving our sibling and peer conflicts. We've spoke about these. Feelings, ask the helpful questions, examine the solutions. Now, sometimes when we come to examining the solutions, we need to go through a process of solving the problem. Now, as I shared earlier on, you know, the child went and chose option number 3 instead of your option number 1. Just look at that green sentence there. The process. I want to emphasize that. The process of the problem solving is more important than the solution we reach. Because it's in working through the process that the child begins to learn and understand, this is these are the steps, this is the process I need to go through in order to solve and to satisfy this conflict. And so it's important that we take time to work through it. Now, your problem worksheet is a beautiful one, and on page 205 of the Parents Tool Shop Manual. And I'd just like to quickly give you a quick glimpse of that. And you would take this page and you would then go and write down, person number one, what were their feelings and perceptions? If there's a second person involved, whether it's a sibling or a peer, you then go and ask them for their feelings and their perceptions. You just summarize the problem. You then brainstorm. You evaluate. You decide who, what, when, how, or whatever. And then the backup plans and so on. And then you get both of them to sign this little problem-solving worksheet. What I love about this is there just below person number two at the top there, it talks about summarize the problem. Notice singular. We handle one problem at a time. We can get so caught and distracted when they start pulling out issues that happened at another time. And then we don't understand which issue are we now dealing with and trying to solve. And you just work yourself in circles. So for that one reason, if anything, I love this worksheet. It helps me to stay focused on the problem at hand. Okay, what are some of the common problems that children will deal with? Right, fear. I run camps for children, fathers and sons camps, mothers and daughters camps, and I've done so for the last 16, 17 years. One of the things I do not do is ghost stories on the camp. I keep away from the scary movies and the crimes and that sort of thing. So when there's crime going on in and around the area or whatever that I hear, I try to ensure that I don't speak about those sort of things with the children. Right, the other problem we have is the sibling conflict. Now, an unhelpful way for you to get involved there is to say things like, stop that fighting. Hey, you're fighting over that car. Give that car, I'll take it away. You want to fight with me? Now you'll go without. Listen, both of you, just go to your room. Just get out of my head. I've just had enough of all this bickering and moaning. Just out, 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 out. Okay, so who did this? Was it you? Was it you? And of course, they keep mum and they look after one another, and then eventually you end up punishing all the children. These are unhelpful ways of solving the conflicts. We need to intervene sometimes. And the time we do intervene, and I've said clearly, it's the child's problem. But if the child is emotionally or physically hurt, they must have the resolve to come or the freedom to come to us as an adult. Don't we as adults, when we are emotionally and physically hurt by another adult, do we not take that problem to another adult, a lawyer, a court, a judge, who can put on restraining orders, etc., etc.? So there comes a time when even the best of us, because of another person's ill intent, we will need outside help. So please go for it if the child is emotionally and physically hurt. If the situation is disrupting the whole household, and if it is a problem that's raising its head over and over and over again. A problem raises its head over and over again because it was and has not been dealt with correctly and properly to the satisfaction of one or both of the parties. This is why we need them to be involved in the problem solving. Because if we tell them what to do, they can derail the process and say, you see, I told you it wouldn't work. Just on point of principle. So these are our areas when we are to intervene. However, do not take the problem out of their hands. Please guide them. How do you think? thing. Let us problem solve. Please, please, please. Togetherness, cooperatively solve it. Siblings and peer conflicts are always child problems. How do you intervene? You listen to both with respect. We judge based on previous situations, and we jump to conclusions, and we crucify the one child before they even have a chance to open their mouth. And I have seen when I've done that, and the child has been unjustly disciplined, and they feel that unjust, very often out of frustration, they will cry. And so whenever I'm dealing with them, I see one of the children begin to cry, I stop myself right there and I say, hold on, am I jumping to conclusions? Have I listened to both children? Have I listened, have I acknowledged their feelings? Have I listened and looked at their perspectives and tried to understand it? Then, again, summarize the problem in your own words. How often haven't you been angry? And in your anger, you have tried to express yourself, but your words just won't come out because you're actually scared of saying half the things that are going through your mind because you don't want to regret having said what you have said. And so you could not say it properly. And this is why it's important that we, if we are listening, that we then summarize this problem. Okay? If the kid keeps on arguing, then we've got to say, okay, maybe I will then go along and I will then give a solution that you might not be happy with. Or let's sit down and keep on listening to what he has to say. Because they must probably still feel that you haven't listened to them. You haven't heard their perspective. And so they're going to keep on arguing. So we need to just spend a little bit more time. If the solution that is chosen always has the same child giving in, then you need to deal. Now, I had a situation of two children where the one child always, always gave in. Always, always allowed the other child, who was more domineering, to get their way. And it really, really started to bug this child. And eventually, instead of trying to solve the problem, they became very stubborn and hard-headed and wanted to say things that they knew were not right and were not going to help the solve the situation, but simply because they felt that they always gave in. And so in this kind of situation, it's important that you chat to both individuals on their own. To the victim, to the one who keeps on giving in, who keeps on feeling that they're hard done by. You need to teach them to be assertive. I wish I had spent more time understanding what assertiveness was. What it is to stand up for myself. Assertiveness for me is standing up for yourself in such a way that you do not give the other person an opportunity to fight back. You don't give them ammunition to take your words and sling them back at you. So this is a technique of where I'm able to stand up, have my say in a respectful manner, in a gentle, firm manner. Not being walked over. Put the shoulders back. Lift the chin up. Get the body language to look confident. And then, on another occasion, with the person who keeps on getting their own way, I suppose sometimes we would call that person the bully. They're always winning and the victim is always losing. We need to talk to them about having a win-win kind of an attitude. Now, there are two words that are very important for us to understand, and that is compromise versus consensus. Compromise means that two people give up something to be able to go forward in peace and harmony. I call that a lose-lose because they've both given up something. a more effective, a more desirable attitude is one of consensus. It's where together we find a solution where both of us are happy with, where both of us know that we have won in gaining what we would like in terms of this relationship. And so we need to teach this child who's always winning to say, hold on, win-lose has not got much on it when compared to where we can get a win-win. What is your long-term goal in terms of this relationship? And with a brother or a sister, a sibling, the long-term goal is we want to get on with one another. We want to be able to enjoy one another's company. We want to be, you know, we don't want to have wives amongst us. And so it's important that we start off this discussion and this understanding with the long-term goal of where we want this relationship to be. A little bit more difficult when it's a peer, because sometimes the peer might not want to go forward with that relationship, and so we might have two people with two different long-term goals in terms of that relationship. And then there are ways in which we can handle that as well. Right, so let's summarize here. How do you help with the mediation? You set time to discuss the problem. Get your problem worksheet out. You give each child an opportunity to share their feelings, their perspective. You give a response to what is being said. Each child can respond. Well, what did you say? Okay, do you counter? And you give them each an opportunity. I don't normally go on further than two times. I think on one occasion I allowed a third round. But by this time, people, if you've given them enough opportunity, should have said the crust of what needs to be said. Right, and then we need to summarize in our own words how we hear what they have said. We all know the story of the broken telephone, don't we? You know, somebody says something, we perceive it differently, and then by the time you get to the end of the line of people, the message is distorted. So it's important that we summarize in our own words what we hear them saying. Then, once we have acknowledged the feelings, they are happy and they understand that you are understanding the problem and the perception that they have, then they would be ready to move forward onto a solution. And there we brainstorm, we evaluate, decide on a solution that everyone can live with. It's not a one-sided decision. Please be very careful. Children invariably have three characteristics. They are selfish, self-centered, and immature. Selfish, self-centered, and immature. And if they can get a solution that they will benefit from, they actually aren't always really willing to go for the win-win. They'll go for the win-lose if necessary. And therefore, it's important that when we are involved with another person, that we go for a solution where everyone can live with them. This is the win-win that we're talking about. Then we give a trial solution, try that solution for a trial period, and let that trial period be maybe negotiated, but not too long. Let them go for it for a day or two or three, and then just follow up with a caring, concerned, I love you kind of approach, rather than a journalistic questioning and quizzing. Remember, because it's the child's problem, we do not, as the adult, need to know the details. It's actually none of our business. If they choose, especially your teenagers value privacy. If a teenager doesn't want to go and shaving, let them work through it. But let them also understand that you are there for them should they want it. Okay. Now, other issues that siblings could come up with is personal space. They're just too close to one another. We see this specifically in a school environment. The children have got a big playground to play on. There's less hassles. When the rain comes and they have to stay indoors and it's playtime, we have a whole lot more bickering and things going on because the space is too limited. You might have a situation of your children sharing a room, and this is the line, and you just dare step over my line. You know, this is my space. I had it in the car, you know, you two stay out of one another ways, you know, here's the line, you know, and then they irritate and tease one another by putting their elbow or their little finger over the line, pushing one another's buttons, and then you get dragged into the whole thing. Property disputes, sharing, this happens a lot with your little children. And it's important that we understand that the owner of the property has the right over that property. And if they don't want to share it, it's their right to not share it. So we need to also think carefully when we're going to go and visit somebody. If the other people we're visiting haven't got the kind of toys that your child has got, and your child wants to take this special toy with them, chat around the sharing aspect up front. Chat around their fear of not wanting to share with so-and-so when you go and visit. And then plant in their minds the idea of possibilities of, if it goes with, that they consider sharing. If they don't want to share, what is the possibility of rather leaving that specific toy at home so that it isn't broken or destroyed or whatever, causing hassle when they get to the other end. Okay, territory, room, I've sort of spoken around that with personal space. Tattling. Got to be careful about telling on and tattling. Telling on is where a person is in trouble and we are telling on and just saying, listen, this person is, and that is a good kind of talking. But if we're tattling to get them into trouble, well, then we've got to just be careful around that. Bickering, and on and on and on. Sometimes we need to get the kids to go and say, listen, what are you actually gunning at one another for? Why are you on one another like this? Now, I want you guys to go and sit and go and chat. One of the things I did with my children was I said to them, you can say whatever you like, as long as you say it respectfully, as long as you do it without shouting, as long as you do it without hitting. There must be respect for human dignity. Right? Then the teasing one. Oh my soul. I wish I had been more aware of this. I tease people the living daylights out of them, and I push the envelope just one too many times. And I don't know how many sibling issues my brother and I had was simply because of the teasing. I was the older one of the two as well, so I suppose that's where I could have used my height, my size, my strength to look after myself, and then being taunted my brother. And we had a chat about that recently. You know, here we are mature adults, and we were chatting around that, and he was just saying, you know, he didn't enjoy some of the ways in which I teased and kept on teasing him to distraction. So watch out for that. Okay, bullies and victims. We've chatted a little bit about this already, but avoid giving the bully the extra attention, because sometimes that's all the bully needs is an audience. I heard a figure given out that bullies only will bully if they have an audience, and for something like 80% of the time. If they didn't have the audience, they wouldn't bully. So it's an interesting aspect. Tend to the victim first, because they're the ones that are emotionally hurt and physically hurt. So tend to them, and then talk to the bully later on. Now, that's a very easy situation to do when it's in your own home, you between your two children. But if it is a school issue, please, can I counsel and advise not to go and take on the child at school as an adult, or get hold of the bully's parents and have a go at them. It's a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare. It's like two lionesses looking after their cubs, and you touch my cub with a word of an insult, a name call, and I will defend my cub to the death, if necessary. I had two girls sitting in my classroom on one occasion, and they were crying. at the end of the day, but really crying. I said, man, just relax. And eventually I couldn't get anything out of these two girls. And I said, listen, girls, go home and we'll chat tomorrow. Mistake number one. Big mistake. Within 5 minutes, those two mothers were out of their cars, into the school grounds, and they were having a full go at each other. Irrespective of other children, other staff members, anybody around them, I walked into this, and I tried to be a bit of a peacemaker, and the one woman turned around, and she said something ugly, but I mean ugly. And I just said, whoa, no mudslinging here, please. Well, an hour and a half later, I had a husband at the school, because now I had taken sides. The short of the story is, within 3 days, those two girls were playing with one another, and the mothers were at each other for years. For years. Please, if your kid has an issue at school, it's their problem. If it's a bully situation and your child needs help, please go speak to the teachers and the principal and get them to mediate, because they will be able to do it from a non-emotional side. So please, on that one. And then you need to teach the victim to problem solve. Now, we spoke a little earlier on around this word of assertiveness, and there's a nice little acronym. It's called STOP. S stands for stand up for yourself. This is a life skill we need to teach our children. We are not going to be there all the time. We need to be able to chat and share with our children, and they must be able to turn around and say, right, this is it. T, take appropriate action. Appropriate action could be move away from that child. Don't sit near them. Make sure you're in a group environment, and so on. The O, once you've stood up for yourself, once you've tried to be assertive, you've taken the appropriate action, you can then go and open up to a trusted adult. Open up to a trusted adult. And then protect yourself. Make sure that you don't say anything that will actually make the situation get worse. Or put target on your head by the way in which you behave and so on. So that's it. I certainly hope that it's giving you something to work on towards helping your siblings or the peers solve their problems. If there are any questions, Jennifer, you can just type them in now at this stage. Otherwise, if you want to get hold of me, please go onto the webpage there at southafricantoolshop.com. My contact email is available there, which is actually just trevor@southafricantoolshop.com is the email address. So if you want to get hold of me via email, you can do that. If you're in South Africa and you're listening to this broadcast, there's my cell phone number. Please give me a buzz, and I would love to be able to work with you. Okay, so Jennifer's got no mic, and she says, thank you, Trevor. I really appreciated the refresher. Have a great evening. Right, thank you very much, Jennifer. Blessings to you and your family, and enjoy the rest of your work. I'm going to call it quits for my day. Keep well. Bye-bye.